Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for dropping by. Stick around. We have magicians, dancing, ponies, and all sorts of madness tonight. Manor Monkey, Chuckle Nuts, went to a Holiday Inn in Fredericksburg, Virginia today to what he thought was a friendly audience, some Rotary Club members, going to talk about the economy. If you want a quick synopsis, here it is. Bush tax cuts, good. Congress spending bills, bad. Now, that could have saved those poor Rotarians who just wanted to eat their rubber chicken and their mashed potatoes an hour of their life that they'll never get back, right? Chuckle Nuts didn't quite receive the reception he expected, no. For the first time, possibly, they had the wrong audience. The selection process wasn't thorough enough. None of his applause lines got any hand clapping, and you got to hear this coming up in a couple of minutes, the way he explains the mortgage crisis. I will guarantee you that nobody in that room today knew what the hell he was talking about. So, anyway, brace yourself. Moron sounds on the program tonight. We'll get to those fairly quickly because you got to hear some of this crap. As you know, Dan Fogelberg died of prostate cancer. I believe he died last night or early this morning, 56 years old. That's kind of sad. I thought, you know, I always enjoyed his music. Liked it a lot. But anyway. All day today, the back and forth between Senator Chris Dodd and Senator Harry Reid and a possible filibuster and the attempt by the Bush crime family to jam this new FISA bill with its whorish associates in the Senate through the Senate. The FISA bill, that's the one that allows Americans to be spied on with a court order. That bill expires in February. So what the Bush crime family and its whores in the House and the Senate are trying to do is to get a new FISA bill passed, one that has retroactive immunization against the telecom companies who spent the past 6 years sucking Bush's wishes to spy on Americans without court orders, violations of the law that in any, you know, Monica sucked on something and Bill Clinton was impeached for it. But Bush, it doesn't matter, you see. So Bush was violating the law, as were the telecom companies for the past 6 years. Nancy Pelosi still feels, of course, has always felt that that's not enough to impeach the bastard. Violating the law, no problem. So this went back and forth today. Got an email this afternoon from our friend Dan. I'm sorry, our friend Bob. Got one from Dan, too. But from Bob at superbeans.com. And what he sent me, he says, some days on rainy days in Seattle, which means any day until sometime in July, I just want to kick in the computer monitor, pop a DVD in the big-ass TV, and watch any Sam Peckinpah or Monty Hellman movie with Warren Oates in it, like Tulane Blacktop or Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. Might take the edge off of paying attention to whatever daily outrage that Republicans have pulled off and the Democrats have acquiesced to. Now, what he was talking about was today, Bush's demand for immunity for telephone companies won a test vote in the Democratic-led U.S. Senate. The vote was 76 to 10. All that was needed was 60 votes to stop the bill from advancing, which means it would have been filibustered. And Senator Chris Dodd was willing to do that. He came off the campaign trail to do that. But a vote of 76 to 10, far more than needed 60, the Senate cleared a procedural hurdle and began considering a bill to increase congressional and judicial oversight of the electronic surveillance of enemy targets. Now, the bill included a provision to grant retroactive immunity to any telecommunications company that participated in Bush's illegal domestic spying program that started shortly after September 11th. So by a vote of 76 to 10, the Senate decided it's okay for Bush to continue to break the law. And not only that, even though they're saying, well, you know, the new bill is going to have increased congressional and judicial oversight of the electronic surveillance of enemy targets. Yeah. See, they don't need to do that. All they need to do is, first of all, remove the son of a bitch from office for crimes against the Constitution and violations of the law. The son of a bitch would be Bush. Remove him from office, and then whoever takes his place, get rid of Cheney, too. Kick him to the curb, too. Whoever becomes the new president then should be told, you play by the law, or we'll kick your ass out, too. It's very simple. You do what the law says. Whatever happened, remember old dead Henry Hyde marching across the Capitol Rotunda? Rule of law, gobble gobble, rule of law, rule of law. Remember all that nonsense when they were going after Bill because of the sucking involved in the Bill Clinton story? You remember that, right? Huh? The impeachment of Bill? But the sucking involved in the Bush story? Nah, no problem. No problem. So, there were Democrats who backed the idea of immunity to the telecom companies. There really were. You can find out. I'm not going to go down the list. But regardless of today's vote, now this was early this morning, regardless of the vote today, the Democrats vowed to offer amendments, ooh, whoop-de-damn-doo, to remove the immunity provision while maintaining new surveillance safeguards that enjoy broad support. Oh, yes, you were going to do that, weren't you, Democrats, right? Huh? Yeah, you were. You were going to do that. You were going to let the bill slide on through the Senate. And the House, of course, has already kicked it out. And then when everybody sat down to work it out, the Democrats promised, cross my heart and hope to pee, I really do, we're going to put amendments in there that strips out the immunity. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and give the telecom companies immunity. But all we promise... we promise we'll come back and take away the immunity. We promise! Sure. So, then, around 5 o'clock this afternoon, from, I don't know, all my little websites here are running together, so pardon me if I don't credit the people that need crediting. I apologize, but, it's kind of a mess. This afternoon, Senator Dodd, who had promised to filibuster a bill that would have given amnesty to the telecoms, he was going to try to stop it. That's the bill, like we've been talking about here, that lets the government spy on Americans with the assistance of your phone company. Sons of bitches. But Dodd's threat didn't materialize. And in other words, he didn't. He went back to filibuster, but he didn't, because the Senate got there before he did and voted 75-16 for cloture, which means, okay, no filibuster. All they needed was 60 votes. That's all they needed. They voted for cloture on the introduction of that bill, which limited the debate on the bill up to 30 hours. 60 votes would have been enough to stop any move to filibuster the bill, and they got 75 with the help of a lot of these filthy, dung-eating Democrats. So, a Dodd campaign spokesman said that Dodd still planned to filibuster the bill when and if the Senate rejects his amendment to strip immunity from the bill. So, as the day worked on, there was another update. Dodd didn't get to filibuster, but he did have a fiery speech at the beginning of the day criticizing the immunity and the state secrets privilege. He also talked about Mark Klein, the AT&T whistleblower, who blew this wide open. Anyway, Dodd said, quote, I see a great danger in immunity for these phone companies. It replaces the rule of law with the rule of secrecy. He went on to say, I believe in letting the courts do their jobs. End quote. So, my correspondent here says Dodd's filibuster task was a lonely one. The current rules about filibusters allow them to be stopped if there are 60 votes. It used to be two-thirds of the Senate. A spokesman for, I believe for Dodd, is it for Dodd? I think it was a spokesman a spokesman from the ACLU, said there were not enough supporters to stand by him in the fight. Even Senator Patrick Leahy, the marble-mouthed Democrat from Vermont who lobbied hard to have his committee's bill be the base bill rather than the Intelligence Committee's, even Leahy voted to limit debate. Even Leahy went against Senator Chris Dodd. I hate Democrats. I swear to God. We'll be right back. 21 past the hour. Okay, you following me so far? Senator Chris Dodd was going to lobby against this bill that would grant these filthy telecom companies immunity from prosecution for 6 years of lawbreaking. 6 years of lawbreaking. The rationale by this filthy administration and the corrupt Justice Department was that the telecom companies stopped terrorist attacks. No, they didn't. And if they did, it could have been just as easily stopped by following the law, if any such were about to occur. And that means you go before a judge, the FISA court judge, who never says no, and you get a warrant. Then everybody knows what's going on that needs to know. You see? But the Bush crime family and this filthy pig vice president of his, they don't want that. They want an imperial presidency. They want fascism in its purest form. So, anyway, the FISA bill runs out in February, and the Bush crime family is trying to get one through that pays off their buddies in the telecom industry, that allows them to break the law for the past 6 or 7 years. Can you believe this? You see, if I walk into a 7-Eleven or a convenience store every day for the next 6 years and steal a candy bar, and eventually they catch me, my ass is going to prison for a long time. But the telecom companies who have been stealing our private conversations in violation of the law, they want immunity. They, oh, hey, listen, and the Bush crime family is willing to give it to them, as are a lot of Democrats. So, anyway, then later on today, the New York Times said the telecommunications companies won the scrimmage in the Senate on Monday as a bill to protect them from lawsuits for cooperating with the Bush administration's eavesdropping programs easily overcame a procedural hurdle. By 76-10, Democrats, the Senate voted to advance the bill for consideration. A measure to block it, led by Senator Christopher Dodd, fell short. Blah, 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 blah. Now, the Times says, in his unsuccessful bid to block the legislation, Dodd urged his colleagues not to immunize the telecom industry for cooperating with the NSA secret program at eavesdropping. He said, quote, for the last 6 years, our largest telecommunications companies have been spying on their own American customers. Secretly and without a warrant, they delivered to the federal government the private domestic communications records of millions of Americans, records this administration has compiled into a database of enormous scale and scope. I have seen six presidents, six in the White House, and I have never seen a contempt for the rule of law equal to this, end quote. Now, Senator Feingold also called the bill deeply flawed. He said, quote, this time around the Senate should stand up to an administration that time and again has employed fear-mongering and misleading statements to intimidate Congress. What Feingold is saying is that the Democratic Party, his party, ought to get some spine, ought to get some backbone, and stop. They're not misleading statements, Senator Feingold. They are goddamn lies. They are lies. Why don't you call them what they are? Is there a rule in the Senate that these cowardly bastards, including Feingold, can't call a lie a lie? Is it written down someplace? Now, I know Russ Feingold is every liberal's hero. Fine. All well and good. Why does he have to use weasel words? It is not misleading statements, Russ. They are lies. Why don't you call them that? Why doesn't any Democrat ever in the Senate have the courage to stand up and say these sons of bitches have violated the law, they've lied to us, we must stop it. Oh, never mind. Jesus God. All right, which all led up to what happened about 8 o'clock tonight. It was posted by Matt Browner Hamlin at the ChrisDodd.com blog. And finally, after some kind of pressure, Majority Leader Harry Reid, another spineless son of a bitch, pulled the FISA bill from consideration in this session. Now, why didn't he do this before? So it's gone now. It'll come up next month, January. But without Dodd's resistance today, you can bet your ass that retroactive immunity would have been passed to the telecom companies who have been sneaking around inside your head, your voice box, your pants, your bedroom, your secret. How much is discussed over the telephone that people don't want anyone else to know? And these bastards in the telecom companies recorded it all and turned it all over to these perverted, voyeuristic thugs in the White House. Had it not been for Dodd, that would have gone through. So, Harry Reid, my goodness, Harry, good for you. Now, watch, you will hear a lot of liberals, I'll bet you, say, well, let's send Harry a letter congratulating him. Yeah.
Felt that old familiar pain. And as I turned to make my way.
It just upsets me. Dan Fogelberg dies today. And these pigs just keep on doing their damage. I swear to God.
These are the actual results for the fiscal year that ended February the 30th.
Yeah, February the 30th. It's about 25 before the hour. So again, the final word about 8 o'clock tonight, posted by Matt Browner Hamlin, campaign blogger, on about Dodd, the ChrisDodd.com blogger. The writer, Matt, says, without Dodd's leadership today, it's safe to assume that retroactive immunity would have passed. There is I'm sure no doubt about that. I don't know what kind of filthy backroom dealing goes on in the Senate. I understand it's horrifying. But Reid pulled the FISA bill from consideration in this session, and it'll be brought up sometime next month. And as the blogger writes, for now the FISA debate is over. It will come up again down the road. But for now, everyone who supported Senator Dodd's leadership against retroactive immunity and supported his promise to filibuster should be proud of their work to defend the Constitution and the rule of law. And you know, I tend to agree with that. Except it is, you know, I don't know how to explain it. I just have a sense of it was just such a tiny little thing. Reid could have pulled the bill at any time. I don't quite get it. And like I said, we will now, I'm sure I'm going to get an email from somebody, part of a mass emailing, from some Democratic organization, mainstream or conservative Democratic organization, telling me that I should send an email to Senator Reid thanking him for his wonderful leadership in pulling the FISA bill. And all I'd like to do is send Reid an email and just, you know, name-calling. That's all. That's pretty much all I can do anymore is just call a son of a bitch a son of a bitch. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but and if you think you have any more power, woo-hoo, good for you. So I, watching this today was stomach-churning. It was just stomach-churning. Now let's go to this idiot Bush. He got a rather chilly reception from the Rotarians of Fredericksburg, Virginia today, even though, as always, his audience carefully screened, background checked, fingerprinted, you know, drop your pants, bend over and cough, you know, everything that they can do to people who get to go in to hear this moronic bastard talk. But, surprise, surprise, his usual applause lines didn't receive any hand clapping at all. You'll hear one where he says, "I'll veto any tax increase," and nothing happens. But it's interesting how he thinks his tax cuts for the wealthy have helped the economy. And any economic problems are, yeah, Congress's fault. Just brilliant.
There's quite an appetite for your money in Washington.
It's called for war.
People can figure out all kinds of ways to spend the taxpayers' money.
War.
My attitude was, particularly in the face of recession and after a terrorist attack,
war,
that the best way to help this economy recover was to let people keep more of their own money.
And war.
And the plan worked. If you think about where we were coming out of 2001 and where we are today, you can't help but say the plan worked. Cutting taxes helped stimulate economic growth.
War.
And yet there's some challenges. A credit issue and a housing issue.
Issue?
In other words, what I'm about to tell you is that the Congress cannot take economic vitality for granted.
Bad old Congress!
There's some positive things Congress can do to make sure that the economy continues to grow and people are working and realizing dreams.
Oh, Christ.
And there's some negative things they can do.
All right, here it comes now.
And the most negative thing that Congress can do.
Here it comes.
In the face of some economic uncertainty.
Here it comes.
Is to raise taxes on the American people. I'll veto any tax increase.
Whoops.
I don't think Congress needs more money. I think they need to learn how to set better priorities.
Like funding your endless wars instead of health care for poor kids, right? This man is just, I don't know, makes me, what's the expression, Kathy? Throw up a little bit in the back of my mouth. So, now, here's the fun part. Raisin Brain really shouldn't try to talk about things he doesn't understand, like the mortgage problem, or hydrogen-fueled automobiles, or long division. Chucklenut stands here in front of these Rotarians, and every time I hear the word Rotarian, I think of whirling dervishes. I don't know why. Chucklenut explains that the mortgage problem is that banks don't loan mortgages anymore. Yeah, don't loan them. So lenders can't pay their mortgages and are forced out of their homes. And then he blames Congress again. Listen to this. I'm not going to interrupt. Listen to this idiotic, dumb bastard.
The housing issue has changed. I can remember the first home I bought in Midland, Texas. I remember going down to the savings and loan and sitting down with the savings and loan officer and negotiating with the savings and loan officer. Well, this day and age, you know, these mortgages have been bundled. So the savings and loan doesn't own the mortgage anymore, or the bank doesn't loan the mortgage anymore, or the local lending institute doesn't loan the mortgage anymore. It's owned by some, you know, international group, perhaps, or it's been bundled into an asset, and so there's hardly anybody to negotiate with. And so some lenders aren't sure where to turn.
Oh, God.
Congress needs to get a bill to my desk that'll make it easier for FHA to continue to help people stay in their homes. We're not bailing people out. We're helping them refinance their money. We're helping them, you know, we're helping them stay in a part of the American dream is what we're doing, and it's worthwhile to do that.
When you bought your first home down in Midland, Texas, you sat down in front of the savings and loan officer. Really? Well, in the early 80s under Reagan, when all the regulatory changes took place that gave the S&L industry new powers, and for the first time in history, measures were taken to increase the profitability of S&Ls at the expense of promoting home ownership, right? What's important to note about the S&L scandal, do you remember that, George? That you, your two of your brothers, and your decrepit old father were involved in? The S&L scandal, George, the reason nobody goes to an S&L anymore is because your family engineered the largest theft in the history of the world, and the U.S. taxpayers are the ones who were robbed. Do you understand that, George? This is what rationalrevolution.net says. The problems occurred in the savings and loan industry as they relate to theft because the industry was deregulated under the Reagan-Bush administration and restrictions were eased on that industry so much that abuse and misuse of funds became easy, rampant, and went unchecked. Now, let me digress. Anytime there is a killing to be made, anytime the rules are eased to the point that abuse and misuse of funds become easy and rampant, you will find a Bush or two. You will find these sons of bitches. They're like maggots around a decaying corpse. There are several ways in which the Bush family played into the SNL scandal, which not only members of the Bush family, but also other politicians that are still in office and part of the Bush Jr. administration today. But Jeb Bush, George Bush Sr., and Neil Bush have all been implicated in the SNL scandal, which cost American taxpayers $1.4 trillion. Between 1981 and 1989, when George Bush, the senior, finally announced that there was an SNL loan crisis, or an SNL crisis, the Reagan-Bush administration worked to cover up the problems by reducing the number and the depth of the examinations required of SNLs, as well as attacking political opponents who were sounding early alarms about the SNL industry. Do you all remember this? I remember this. Industry insiders were aware of monstrous problems developing inside the SNL industry as early as 1986. But the information was kept from the media until after Bush Sr. won the 1988 election. This family is corrupt as deeply as any filthy crime family anywhere in the history of crime. Do you understand that? Jeb Bush defaulted on a $4.5 million loan from Broward Federal Savings. Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida. Broward Federal Savings in Sunrise, Florida. After federal regulators closed that SNL, the building that Jeb used the $4.5 million to finance was reappraised by the regulators at $500,000, which Bush and his partners paid, and the taxpayers had to pay back the remaining $4 million. Neil Bush, the most widely targeted member of the Bush family by the press in the SNL scandal, Neil became director of Silverado SNL at the age of 30 in 1985. 3 years later, when that institution went belly up, it cost taxpayers $1.6 billion. It goes on and on and on and on and on. It should be noted that shortly after news of Neil Bush's involvement in the SNL scandal hit the press, his filthy, decrepit father announced the Desert Storm campaign in Iraq. So Neil Bush's name quickly disappeared from the headlines. So when George Bush stands up there and tells the Rotarians that, I remember first time I bought in Midland, Texas, I went on SNL and sat down, and, well, guess what, you can't do that anymore. No, you filthy bastard, because your family destroyed it. Your thieving, miserable outlaw family destroyed the SNL industry. You and your friends, you and the parasites that you hang out with, that attach themselves to the banking industry, any industry, to the American taxpayer, to the American public, to children, to veterans, you blood-sucking bastards, you attach yourself like lampreys, and you suck out everything you can. But you're going to tell the Rotarians about the mortgage crisis.
And I like banks of Fender Twin Reverb. Well, when I walk in there, treat me like a dog, gonna hit him in the head with the doo-doo log. Republicans, one and all, their tallywhackers are mighty small. Steal from the poor and give to the rich, gonna make the bank president twitch in a ditch. Oh. I hate banks.
We proposed a plan that takes the issue about solvency farther down the road than that any other president.
It's about 8:30 before the hour. Okay, last one from Bush here at the Rotary Club in Fredericksburg, Virginia. He wandered around the energy issues, the need for more nuclear power plants, health care, biomass, switchgrass. And then he closed with his little optimist bit. Now, just listen to this.
I hope you can tell I'm an optimistic fella.
You're a fool.
We've been through a lot over the last 7 years. We really have, but
caused
I'm
by
absolutely
you.
Convinced that this country is strong and vibrant. We're in the lead when it comes to the freedom agenda.
What?
I believe the decisions that have been made over the last 7 years are going to lead peace.
Oh, my God.
Sometimes I know it's hard for you to tell it. But I'm convinced that when people look back at this era, they're going to say, thank goodness the United States of America never abandoned its belief that freedom is universal. I happen to believe there is an Almighty. And a gift of that Almighty to every man, woman, and child is freedom.
It's death.
And I believe it's in our nation's interest to act upon that belief.
War.
And so I come to you today as a man honored to serve a great country.
Death.
With some ideas on how we can stay strong economically.
War.
And a great faith in the capacity of freedom to bring the peace we want.
Freedom to bring the peace we want. Like carpet bombs will do that too, and Blackwater rapists and murderers, and Halliburton ripoff artists, and, oh, let's not forget Willie Peter, White Phosphorus. Okay, he's an optimist. Uh-huh. Ben Feller, writing at the AP, quoted Bush at the Rotary Club as saying, there's definitely some storm clouds and concerns, but the underpinning's good. We'll work our way through this period. Of course, consumer confidence is near a two-year low. We've had a pretty good economic run here in the country, Bush said, citing high productivity and consistent job growth. As for the collapse of the housing market and the severe credit crunch that threatens to drag the country into a recession, if not a depression, Bush said, well, there are some challenges. The Congress cannot take economic vitality for granted. There's some positive things Congress can do. The most negative thing they can do is raise taxes. Charles Schumer of New York, the guy that brought you Attorney General Mukasey, who's chairman of the Congress's Joint Economic Committee, said, what world is President Bush living in to be so out of touch with the economic realities families and markets are facing? Oh, that's a powerful statement, Schumer. Jesus, why don't you go stick your head? I know. Why don't you go see if waterboarding really is torture? Meanwhile, Bruce emails me, Mike, the Fed is organizing massive loans from foreign banks to try to inject another $40 billion into the U.S. banks this week, with more promise for January. Abu Dhabi must be tapped out by now. In the old days, the Fed would make all the loans to U.S. banks. In effect, the U.S. can no longer issue its own currency and must borrow from other countries in order to stave off economic collapse. The right-wing chant, our economic system is the envy of the world, sounds more like empty boasts of a banana republic dictator. Yeah, Bush stands up. Has nobody told this dumb bastard that the Fed or the Treasury or somebody, I don't even know, and frankly I don't care, that they're like telemarketing the rest of the world looking for money. Hey, can you bail us out? We just need 40, 50 billion. Oh, I don't know. We'll give you 9%. Okay? China, Abu Dhabi, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, wherever they can find the money. But you see, we don't care. We couldn't care less. Most of us don't even know what all that means. What do you mean, Mike? What's going on? I don't know. And this is what Bush and Cheney and the rest of these proto-fascists count on. It's what Mussolini counted on. It's what Hitler counted on. It's what Franco counted on. It's what Stalin counted on. Fear and ignorance. Fear and ignorance. Keep them scared and stupid, and you can do anything you want with them. Wasn't that the dictum from Joseph Goebbels? Or was it Hermann Goering? Don't send me the quote. I've seen it 1,000 times. The statement that Goering made at the Nuremberg war trials. It's before he committed suicide. Yeah, just make a threat. In our case, it was the Jew. In your case, it can be the Muslim. No difference. Who cares? Keep them ignorant and scared. Well, that's where we are. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Dropping stuff all over the studio. Welcome back. Malloy here on Nova M. Oh, by the way, we'll be here all this week. For those of you who are curious about the vacation schedule, I know a lot of people in broadcast take this week off. Not me. I can't afford it, for one thing. Anyway, we'll be here all this week, and then we're off Monday and Tuesday, Christmas Eve Day and Christmas Day. And then we're back Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week, Christmas week. And then we're going to take a week off around the first of the year. And this Friday night will be our Christmas show, our annual Christmas show on this program. We have O Holy Nightmare music for you. We have a reading from Luke, the Christian mythology of the birth of Jesus Christ. Molly will come in here and sit on my lap, and I will read to her the night before Christmas. If we can get through that, I get a prize. What else do we have on our Christmas party? Christmas carols.
We may have a visit from Pickles.
We may.
Possibly.
Also, a little thing about the winter solstice from Bridget, our friend at Fairy Woodland, fairywoodland.com. And if you haven't been to that website for a while, you ought to go. I'm telling you, even if you don't take advantage of what's offered there, just go to fairywoodland.com and look. It's amazing what she and her husband do. So what else? What else do we do on the Christmas show? Night Before Christmas, O Holy Nightmare, the reading from Luke, Christmas carols, winter solstice thing this year from Bridget, Molly. That's it? Okay.
Possibly a visit from Pickles.
Possibly a visit.
We also used to have astrologers and toy makers, and
that was,
it was a Yulapalooza.
Yeah, that was back in the day when I worked for ABC, and you know, they were throwing money all over the place. I work for Nova M now, and we are a struggling startup. Andrew in Boise, Idaho sent this to me. Mike, I wanted to pass along an important clarification about Harry Reid's role in the FISA bill today. No one should be thanking Reid for his so-called excellent leadership. by pulling a bill he chose to allow to come to the floor. Reed, Andrew writes, had two versions of the FISA bill in his hands, one with retroactive immunity for telecom companies and one without such immunity. He chose to allow the one with retroactive immunity to go forward. His stamp of approval was all over it. In my opinion, Andrew writes, the only reason he then later pulled the bill he allowed to come to the floor to begin with was because Senator Dodd's resistance was getting some measure of media attention, and the showdown between a Democratic leader of the Senate and a Democratic senator scares Reed more than being a cowardly, complicit failure and partner to war crimes. Oh, and the teardown of constitutional democracy. He chose to postpone a vote on FISA, hoping that a continuing delay will wear down someone like Dodd, who is working on a campaign schedule, so that eventually the bill will go through. Reed is a miserable failure, and he ought to be run out of Washington. Cheers, Andrew, in Boise, Idaho. I didn't know that. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate it. The war-loving, baby-eating... Oh, my God. I said that, and then I realized that that's what the Christians used to say about the Jews, that they would capture, they would steal Christian babies at Easter and drink their blood or something. Oh, my God. I completely forgot. See, deep down inside, you folks are right. I'm just an anti-Semite. I'm a racist, homophobic anti-Semite. Lieberman, this useless hunk of whatever the hell he is, this so-called independent, who was forced down Al Gore's stomach 8 years ago, forced to take this pig on. Lieberman today showed his colors by endorsing John McCain, who's not going to be president of anything, ever. Oh, yeah, well, the Des Moines Register endorsed McCain, too, but who cares? I was listening to NPR today, and they had on the editorial page editor of the Des Moines Register. And the Des Moines Register is a big paper in a city or in a state that is mostly corn. No offense to Iowans, but, you know, what the hell, let's be real. So the Des Moines Register endorsed Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side and McCain on the Republican side. On NPR, they had the editorial page editor on for an interview. And she said that the reason the board chose Hillary Clinton, 4 years ago they chose John Edwards. But the reason they chose Hillary Clinton, listen to this, is because the editorial board has come to the conclusion that John Edwards' message has become a little bit shrill and strident, that he's become a little bit unbalanced in his approach, because what is John Edwards doing? He is putting the blame of why we're in the mess we're in where it belongs, to a large degree on U.S. corporations and their filthy pig lobbyists, the telecom companies, the energy companies, the oil companies, on and on. And how dare John Edwards have the utter temerity to tell the truth? So the Des Moines Register chose Hillary Clinton to endorse. Why? Because she's going to hit the ground with lots of leadership skills, and she knows how to bring people together. That's what the woman said. Now, why did they choose McCain? After saying that the Democratic field had a depth of experience, but they chose Hillary for the reasons I just stated, then they turned to the Republican field. And the woman being interviewed said, we had a problem with, the Republican side. Because while each of the candidates may bring something to the race for the nomination, we just couldn't find anyone that, so we came, hesitate, so we decided on John McCain because of his experience. Well, in the meantime, back in Munchkinville, Joe Lieberman, the former Democratic nominee, forced down Al Gore's throat to be Vice President of the United States. This useless hunk of crap endorses McCain. Not that it matters. Not that it matters who Lieberman endorses. Lieberman could endorse Mickey Mouse. Who would care? Now, listening to AP Radio Network News on this network, I don't know if that's what you listen to when we go to news breaks at the top of the hour or not, but I heard our ABC, AP Network News, I think it's AP, mention the story. But nobody cares. Nobody who gives a rat's ass who Lieberman endorses. The only reason I bring it up is because he is a turncoat. The Democrats in Connecticut tossed him out on his ass. The Republicans voted him in. They dumped their own candidate and voted him in. Joe Lieberman has an I after his name in brackets. He's a Republican. He is a war-loving, degenerate Republican. Lieberman is a fanatic hawk on Iraq, just like McCain. They're both leaders of the War Forever movement. Both McCain and Lieberman, dangerous extremists. Absolute war, just war lovers. McCain because he's psychotic, Lieberman because he's a voyeur. My good friend Stephen Crockett, co-host of Democratic Talk Radio, sent the information. Back after the break, I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Got a real grungy story about Bush coming back. I hesitate to share this with you, but what the hell.
I'm a driver. I'm a winner. Things are going to change. I can feel it.
Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
21 past the hour. Donald in Augusta sent me an email about the FISA bill today. He writes, Mike, as I've listened to your commentary about the FISA bill, the most troubling aspect of this is not being discussed. Reid's actions are less about being cowardly and complicit with the Bush administration. This is about corporate influence over the Democratic Party. Donald writes, for Democrats who support Hillary Clinton, you need to pay attention to the moves made by Rockefeller and Reed to make sure the telecom companies are not held liable for their breaking of the law. Look at where Hillary's financial support comes from. And if she's elected president, understand this is who her policy proposals will benefit. If we want more of the same, then elect Clinton as the next president. Her positive media coverage is no accident. And then Donald closes by saying, we are in more trouble than we're willing to face. Yeah, I know. Boy. All right, I don't know about this story. The only reason I'm going to... matter of fact, I think I mentioned it. This came out back in the summer, I think in June or July. But just in the past week or so, it started making the rounds. This is on Daily Kos. About 10 days ago, under the title, Who Has to Carry the Feces? The diarist is Carver, and he says he read something in Looking Glass News that left him shaking his head and muttering WTF. He says, but I couldn't decide if it was funny or troubling or just bizarre. Apparently, securing the commander guy's excrement is an integral part of his security protocols. Now, here's what he's talking about, and I think this was in the, I forget what mainstream media source it was in, but here it is. According to our Austrian sources, Austrian newspapers are currently abuzz. This is back in June, with special security details of George W. Bush's recent trip to Vienna. Although the heavy-handed Gestapo-like security measures meted out to Viennese homeowners, business proprietors, and pedestrians by U.S. Secret Service agents and local police before and during Bush's visit received widespread Austrian media attention, it was White House toilet security, or Toilsec, which has Austrians talking the most. The White House flew in a special portable toilet to Vienna for Bush's personal use during his visit. The Bush White House is so concerned about Bush's security, the veil of secrecy extends over the president's bodily excretions. And then back to Carver. Carver writes, I know there are some on-strike comedy writers weeping because they can't get this stuff to the performers. Everything about it screams comedy. This Portageon follows the chimp wherever he goes, Carver writes, in a foreign country. And although the article doesn't say, I would guess in this country as well. It doesn't mention the poor sap that lugs the potty around, but worse, the one that has to carry bags of chimp droppings. And then back to the article. The special Portageon in Austria captured Bush's feces and urine and flew the waste material back to the United States in the event that some enterprising foreign intelligence agency might conduct a sewage pipe operation designed to trap and examine Bush's waste material. One can only wonder why the White House is taking such extraordinary security measures for the presidential poop. And then back to Carver. Carver writes, I would assume the White House would tell us that the president is concerned that he would be contributing to the country's solid waste disposal problem, or some equally logical reason. Certainly not because an analysis of the aforementioned excreta would read like a drugstore inventory list. And back to the article, even Bush's toilet paper was flown from the U.S. air base at Ramstein, Germany. And then this was kind of added on. In addition, Bush's food was flown in from the United States and tested with special chemicals before he ate it. Romanian dictator Nicolae Ceausescu, who was shot by firing squad in 1989, was the last major European leader to use a food tester. The last frequent state visitor to Vienna, who always relied on a food tester, was Adolf Hitler. I remember in one of my more deranged moments back in June bringing that story up. Good God in heaven. Ben writes in, I know why he uses a private John. It's where he does his lines. He's not talking about reading a script, I don't think. Oh, my God. The presidential poop and pee get scooped up and sent home. How much more of this can you take? Are you okay? Everybody still with me tonight? All right, when we come back, we have... why did I do that? We have more to go before the program. Oh, God, I didn't even say that. Yeah, I did say that. We have more distance to cover before the program's over. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Your host for a Pence Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Julie in Seattle sent me an email on Friday, and I guess I missed it. She writes, in October, Harper's featured Naomi Klein's article, Disaster Capitalism. Of course, we've talked about that. She says, I did buy the book, but lately it's like the facts are just cumulative and demoralizing to me at this point. I despair of democracy and try to submerge fantasies of the guillotine and Leninism most days. These days, all the while knowing no movement or dire circumstance is likely to induce a revolutionary spirit in our population. Yeah, no kidding. Americans became Winston Smith without being tortured themselves. Now we have to endure semantic quibbles at fourth grade level on what torture is, or even if it exists. But she sent me an email from Diana that I guess went to her. I'm not sure. But just a few lines here. It's entitled, We Didn't Stop the Fire. And the writer says, I have just witnessed firsthand the phenomenon described by Naomi Klein in her October essay, Disaster Capitalism. I guess this was an email into Harper's magazine, you know, letter to the editor. Anyway, Diana writes, last summer, forest fires ravaged much of Idaho. But when flames began to close in on Sun Valley and the colossal, seldom-used second homes of various celebrities, 1,700 firefighters converged on our small town almost overnight. For several weeks, the sky was thick, not only with smoke, but with the roar and clatter of planes dropping flame retardant and helicopters sucking up the water from nearby lakes. Tent cities complete with showers, laundries, and food facilities sprang up to house the firefighters, the support teams, and the private security contractors. We are grateful that our own modest home was spared devastation, but we are ashamed, too, knowing that our salvation was due to the proximity of a few starter chateaus belonging to superstars. Starter chateaus, as they have been dubbed by the locals. Orwell told us that the common man, to be controlled, for the common man to be controlled, he must remain, quote, an ignorant fanatic, whose prevailing moods are fear, hatred, adulation, and orgiastic triumph. In other words, it is necessary that he should have the mentality appropriate to a state of war. It does not matter whether the war is actually happening. End quote. And Diana closes by saying, I fear that Klein's predictions are already proving as prescient as Orwell's. Disaster capitalism is upon us. Yeah, more recent than that, if you remember some of the fires in California, as horrible as they were, the people that had a certain kind of homeowners insurance were graced with private firefighting companies showing up to protect their homes. Private firefighting companies showing up to protect their homes. The other homes, too bad. It's astonishing what's happening in this country, isn't it? Huh? Oh, God. I can remember my grandfather saying that 50 years ago. The new Secretary of State in Ohio, the one who took the place of the suck-up Ken Blackwell, a thug if ever one existed, George W. Bush's re-election campaign chairman in Ohio, and the Ohio Secretary of State, the new Secretary of State, Democrat Jennifer Brunner, said that all five voting systems used in Ohio, the state whose electoral votes narrowly swung two elections to Bush, that all five voting systems used in that state have critical flaws that could undermine the integrity of the 2008 general election. This comes in a report commissioned by Ohio's top elections official. Secretary of State Brunner said, quote, it was worse than I anticipated. I had hoped that perhaps one system would test superior to the others, end quote. They didn't. At polling stations, teams working on the study were able to pick locks to access memory cards. They were able to use handheld devices to plug false vote counts into machines. At boards of elections, they were able to introduce malignant software into servers. Are you listening? You know, Brad at Brad Blog has been reporting this for a long time. Black Box Voting has. Ms. Brunner proposed replacing all of the state's voting machines, including the touch screen ones used in more than 50 of Ohio's 88 counties. She wants all counties to use optical scan machines that read and electronically record paper ballots that are filled in manually by voters. She is calling for legislation and financing to be in place by April so the new machines can be used in the presidential election in November. She said she could not estimate the cost of the changes. Well, what difference does it make? This is democracy we're talking about, right? Voter integrity? Florida, the article goes on, this is in the Times Saturday. Florida, another swing state with a history of voting problems. See, why doesn't the Times say what it is? Bob Driehaus writing at the Times. Why don't you say voting theft? Florida is also scrapping touchscreen machines and switching to optical scan ones for the election. Ms. Brunner succeeded J. Kenneth Blackwell, a Republican who came under fire for simultaneously overseeing the 2004 election and serving as co-chairman of Bush's re-election campaign in Ohio. You know, how did that happen? How did that happen? And Florida, how did that happen? Jesus God. Corrupt bastard. All of them. Anyway, Ms. Brunner, the Democrat Secretary of State, said she ordered the study as part of a pledge to overhaul voting after problems made headlines for various reasons in the 2000 and 2004 elections. The study released last Friday found that voting machines and central servers made by ESNS, Premier Election Solutions, formerly Diebold, and Hart InterCivic were easily corrupted, all of them. A spokesman for Premier, which is Diebold, Chris Rigall, said hardware and software problems had been corrected in his company's new products, which will be available for installation in 2008. If the state of Ohio takes this pig bastard's machinery back, then there is something weird. I just hope that Ms. Brunner will not. Ken Fields, the spokesman for ESNS, said his company strongly disagrees with some of the report's findings. He said, quote, "We can also tell you that our 35 years in the field of elections has demonstrated that election systems and software voting technology is accurate, reliable, and secure. Who are you going to believe, your lying eyes or me?" I added the last part. End quote. The academic team that conducted the study is made up of faculty members and students from Cleveland State University, Penn State, University of California, Santa Barbara, University of Pennsylvania. They all agreed that systemic change was needed. The team wrote, quote, "All of the studied systems possess critical security failures that render their technical controls insufficient to guarantee a trustworthy election." How many people have told you and me, not that you or I needed any convincing, how many people have been screaming to America that the last two presidential elections were stolen? And they were stolen by a criminal enterprise that has done this to the country. Done what, Malloy? Take a look. Ruined the reputation of this country on a global scale, involved us in two wars and mega death, destroyed our economy, undermined the whole idea of rule of law, trash the Constitution, all because these three or four voting machine companies, in collaboration with the Bush crime family, decided to destroy democracy. Democracy in this country, remember, ended December 12, 2000. That's when it stopped. That's when this corrupted United States Supreme Court, by a vote of 5-4, said stop the vote counting in Florida. Give the election to Bush. So they stole that one with the help of the United States Supreme Court. They stole the second one with the help of their friends in the vote counting or the vote processing industry. And this weaselly son of a bitch at Diebold makes the statement, "Oh, well, we've been in business 35 years. Now, the report's wrong. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Huh? Who are you going to believe?" dumb Americans. Who are you going to believe? So there you go. Now, who do you think in the right wing world will pay any attention to this at all? Huh? Who in right wing media is going to step out tomorrow and talk about this? This report came out last week. I can't say I listened to every newscast over the weekend because I didn't. But is this being reported by Charlie Gibson or what's his name? Brian Williams? Is it being reported by the former U-boat commander, Wolf Blitzer, on CNN? Is MSNBC talking about it? How about Fox? Is anybody talking about it? Proof positive that two presidential elections were stolen.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 10 before the hour, and the last thing I have here, I guess, is a federal judge ruled today that the White House visitor logs are, in fact, public documents. So now we'll find out about Jeff Gannon and, you know, how many times he went in to service Karl Rove or whoever he was servicing, among other people. We'll also find out about all the meetings that were had with Jack Abramoff, the lobbyist who went to prison. Anyway, the judge rejected a legal strategy that the Bush administration had hoped would get around public records laws and let them keep their guests a secret. This Bush administration, is it not? It is worse than Soviets when it comes to secrecy, worse than the Nazis, and absolutely has no interest in protecting or defending or adhering to or abiding by the U.S. Constitution. Not a bit. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The Associated Press says the ruling is a blow to the Bush administration, which has fought the release of records showing visits by prominent religious conservatives. Oh, really? Visitor records are created by the Secret Service, and that's subject to the Freedom of Information Act. But the Bush crime family ordered all that data turned over to the White House, where they're treated like presidential records, and then they're outside the scope of the public records law. You see how that works? That's like Cheney saying, I'm not part of the executive branch, so get away from me. U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth ruled that logs from the White House and Vice President Dick Cheney's residence must remain Secret Service documents, and therefore are subject to public records requests. The lawsuit was brought by CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. It's a liberal watchdog group. And the judge ordered the Secret Service to turn over visitor logs regarding 9 conservative religious commentators, including the execrable, I can't say it tonight, James Dobson, the little gnome or the troll Gary Bauer, and the now dead, thank you Jesus, Jerry Falwell. The CREW's chief counsel said, I think it's hugely significant. The judge saw the Bush administration's arguments for what they were. End quote. Now the White House spokesman Tony Fratto and Justice Department spokesman Charles Miller said lawyers were reviewing the decision and they would have no immediate response, but the Bush administration is expected to appeal the judge's ruling. In a separate case, this is interesting, CREW had sought an order declaring illegal a Bush administration policy under which the Secret Service destroys its copies of the logs once they're turned over to the White House. These rat bastards don't want a record of the records. They don't want a record of the records being recorded as records anywhere. In that second case, involving visits by Jack Abramoff, the judge said he did not have the authority to issue such a ruling. Oh my God. Because the logs were declared Secret Service records, they cannot be destroyed without approval from the National Archives. But the Bush crime family doesn't care. Why are they asking the judge? Why don't they just send Cheney or one of his hitmen down to the Secret Service, walk in, say, give me the records, and put a flamethrower to them? That's normally what they do. They and their telecom buddies spy on millions of Americans without a court order. What the hell is this? You know, this judge is issuing rulings. I bet you Cheney and Bush are sitting back tonight just laughing their asses off. Now, back in the 90s, Bill Clinton's political cannibals, the ones who were trying to eat him and Monica alive, used Secret Service logs, the documents that talked about White House visit by donors, money raisers, pardon seekers, and Monica Lewinsky. On Monday, the judge, Lamberth, detailed the Secret Service's acquiescence as the Bush administration took control of the White House visitor records. The Secret Service said, okay, you the boss, sure, okay, yeah, here they are. In May of 2006, the judge noted the Secret Service transferred to the White House all records of visitors' entries and exits during Bush's fake, miserable presidency from January 20, 2001 to April 30, 2006. Over 5 years of records handed. I'll bet they're missing. What do you want to bet they're missing? Ah! Oh, we lost them. Ah! The Bush administration, you see, had sought to have the case moved from Judge Lamberth's courtroom and placed in front of District Judge Rosemary Collier, who is an appointee of Bush. Let's see. When the pig man went looking for drugs that his housekeeper couldn't provide for him anymore, they called that doctor shopping. Is this called lawyer or judge shopping? The Bush crime family tried to move it from a judge that has been, I don't know who appointed Lamberth, couldn't care less, but District Judge Rosemary Collier, an appointee of President Bush. So what they're saying here is that District Judge Rosemary Collier is a whore. She is a whore. She's a street whore who will, no offense to sex workers, who will do what her pimp tells her to do, George Bush. I wonder how U.S. District Judge Rosemary Collier feels about being considered nothing more than a cheap street whore. I wonder how she feels tonight or a couple of days ago when this news was released. Oh, Lamberth served in the Justice Department before President Reagan put him on the federal bench. Oh, he was a Reagan appointee. Oh, my goodness. Isn't that interesting? But he would have ruled and did rule against the Bush crime family and District Judge Rosemary Collier, according to the Bush crime family, by implication, is one of their street whores. My, my. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I just can't get over that. Bush says the economy is safe and sound while desperate efforts are being made to borrow money from as many foreign countries as possible. And the national debt is, where is it, $8 trillion, $9 trillion, but the economy is safe and sound. The dollar is losing ground daily. I mean, I'm not trying to be a Cassandra. No, not Cassandra. Who's the one that talks about all the bad things? Is it Cassandra? I'm not trying to be that. Those are just facts. And Bush says the economy is safe and sound. There's definitely some storm clouds, but the underpinning's good. The underpinning of this economy is soon going to be euros. Oh, God. All right, let's do some phone calls here, starting with Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was true what I was reading on the internet recently that, George Bush Sr., you know, speaking of fecal matter, I mean, you know, took a crap about 60 years ago.
Now, be careful, Joe.
And out came W. But
you didn't hold on for an hour and a half to say that, did you?
No, I got a lot more to say.
Well, don't. I mean, all right. Well, what?
Well, I don't know. I thought it was funny. That's the only thing that matters. The fact that I thought it was funny. No, but speaking of things that are funny, what?
Joe, you've been calling this program for 6 or 7 years, and I have to say that is probably the most sophomoric thing I think I've ever heard you say. That's right.
It's not even.
Well, okay, but that was a news story.
A news story. Oh man, come on.
It was a news story 6 months ago. And then it popped up again because it's around the internet. But you know, you sound like a fourth grader tonight, so I'm going to just hang up and move on to somebody else. You know better than to do that. You really do. I mean, you know, I'm pretty open on this program, and I say a lot of crazy stuff, but not that. That's caca humor that you just attempted. And sorry, Joe, you just came across like a real idiot. Evan is calling from Durham, North Carolina, listening via the internet. Evan, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Evan.
Hey, I think that Harry Reid, we need to consider him to be, like, we need to think of him like we think of Joe Lieberman at this point. Because, I mean, not only is, I mean, it would be different if he was just in a position and didn't really, was, in a position where he didn't really know how to react, you know, maybe they checkmated him or something like that.
Hey, Evan, hold on a second. Do you have me on speakerphone? You got to take me off the speakerphone. We're just getting too much.
I don't.
We're getting
Let me see. Let me do this.
Too much feedback, pal. It's just.
Oh, I got feedback.
Just
is
not
that
working.
Better?
No, it's still the same.
Oh.
So let me put you on hold. Real quick here. You try to figure it out, and we'll try to come back to you. Bruce is calling from California, listening on the internet. Hey, Bruce.
Yeah,
hey,
Mike.
Bruce.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hey.
A couple things I wanted to comment on. One is on the, presidential poop story. To your last caller, it's a true story. It's all for real. That's not a joke. But the thing is that there were actual intelligence operations conducted by I had links to it, but I was searching while I was.
No, I know what you're going to say. They used to check the excrement of certain foreign leaders to see if they had, occult blood in their stools
might
indicate colon cancer.
I
understand that.
Just as long as we're on the same page that there was a real. There has been done, but I think that if Bush is that concerned about it, ostensibly he's a very healthy man. He exercises three or four hours a day.
I agree with the person who who posted at Daily Coast about 2 weeks ago. It's an old story. It's from way back in June. But they don't want any chemical analysis of anything that comes out of Bush's body. For a very simple reason, and I totally agree with this, the chemical analysis that would be displayed would be overwhelming. I think you and I can agree that this guy is on drugs. I mean, we have watched enough of his so-called toy press conferences and his gibberish.
Absolutely, I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't know
what
he's doing.
And I think that's what I would suspect.
So it has nothing to, it has nothing to do with foreign agents finding out if there's anything wrong with Bush. It has everything to do with the American public not getting some kind of a YouTube display of a chemical analysis of his excrement.
Sure. Listen, one other thing, the comments about the voting in Ohio and the Secretary of State, I just have to point out, as far as the way I see it, voting is the most important, single most important issue that we're facing, because nothing else matters. If the voting, if the vote's not counting, what the arguments about the war or global warming or whatever are irrelevant. I mean, if you don't have secure elections, if you can't get people who are legitimately elected to serve, then everything else is moot, isn't it?
Keep in mind who was the wag who said it? Maybe it was Stalin, and I forget the exact quote, but he said it's not who votes, it's who counts the votes.
Right. That matters.
Or something like that.
Right, I know what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring that up, and I'll let you get on to other callers, but I appreciate what you do.
Okay, thanks a lot. Checking in, Bruce. All right, let's see. You want to try Evan again? All right, let's see. Evan, let's try it again. Where are you? Are you there?
Yep, right here.
All right, much better.
Better? Yeah, okay, great, great.
Better.
My comment was that we need to start thinking about Harry Reid the same way we think about Joe Lieberman, because I mean, this is not defense. You know, this is not, well, they checkmated me and now I don't have any other option but to do what they want us to do. I mean, this has been going on for several months, and I think that we are being, you know, if we keep giving this guy, he has plenty of rope to hang himself with, and this is should be the straw that breaks the camel's back, as far as that goes.
The
FISA issue.
Right, and it should be the straw that breaks whose back?
That breaks our support for Harry Reid.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you, but you and I both know, Evan, that's not going to happen. I'm sure right now, even as we're sitting here talking at 11:14 in the evening Eastern Time, I will guarantee you that there are liberal, so-called liberal, or not liberal, but Democratic bloggers hard at work trying to whip up people who go to their blog sites to send letters of thank you to Harry Reid, you know, for being such a true American and a patriot. And as that one email that I read tonight, Reid had two bills that he had choice to put before the Senate. It's up to Reid to put these bills out there. And one of them contained immunity for these filthy telecom companies, and the other one did not. And he put the one out there that contained immunity. And that's the one he snatched back. And I tend to believe my correspondent who said that the reason he pulled it back is because it would have been very unseemly to see a Democratic presidential candidate, even though he's third tier, that would be Chris Dodd, lobby or filibustering against a bill allowed on the Senate floor by the Senate Democratic leader. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why Reid pulled it. And I agree with the blogger from Chris Dodd's presidential campaign that had Chris Dodd not taken a stand against his own corrupt party's leadership, that bill would have been passed today.
I think you're right.
Yeah, so, well, not me. I mean, I'm as ignorant about this stuff as you know. But I just, you know, followed this thing today and read some stuff that was sent to me. I mean, guys like you and I, Evan, I don't see how we ever can figure out what's really going on. I can't. I mean, I just can't. Unless somebody, two or three somebodies, Bob was one of them tonight, would just sit down and send me an email and say, here it is, pal, in four easy sentences. Evan, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
To Washington, they had to run. States' rights just weren't that much fun. Don't you hate that crap? They just keep lying all the time.
Don't worry about anything here in Washington, D.C.
Past the hour. Back to your phone calls. We have two open lines if you want to jump in here. 800-989-1480. Kelly is calling from Wichita Falls, Texas. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, listen, I was just calling because I'm just so ticked off. I can't even see straight with Harry Reid allowing this free pass for the retroactive immunity for these traitors telecom companies. I can't believe these guys do this, and I don't understand why.
Well, I don't either. You do understand though that what Reed did was to pull the bill from the floor. I mean, it's not there anymore. It'll be back from the floor of the Senate. It'll be back come January when all these thugs and cowards come back. The thugs being on the Republican side, the cowards being on the Democratic side. It'll be back. They'll be back. Don't you think?
I would imagine so. I just have a lot of respect for, Dodd making a stand and saying he wants to filibuster the thing, but I don't know if it, can they actually accomplish that?
Well, I think he accomplished something. I'm one of the many who give Chris Dodd an awful lot of credit today. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama said that they agreed with what Dodd did, but they're both senators, and they didn't leave the campaign trail to go back to Washington and threaten to begin a filibuster. It was Dodd. Now, some cynic can say, well, Dodd doesn't have an ice cube's chance in hell of being president. That doesn't matter. He's out there busting his hump. And he went back in order to threaten his own leadership, as it turns out, the leadership of his own party,
right.
Harry Reid, that, I will make the stand here. I will be Horatio at the bridge. I will make the stand if nobody else is going to. And I don't think he even phrased it that way. It wasn't like he was the default filibusterer. It's just that as far as I can determine from the stuff that's been sent to me today, Dodd made a conscious decision based on his respect for the rule of law and went back to filibuster against this bill that, I've never heard of something. Have you that gives by legal fiat, by the order of the United States Congress, gives a free pass to corporations who have been breaking the law?
Right.
And in a conspiracy to break the law with the Justice Department and whoever else is involved in this for 6 years. I've never heard of anything like this.
No, I mean, it totally falls or flies in the face of everything that we stand for as Americans.
Oh, my God. Or at least what we learned or what we thought we stood for. And it wasn't so long ago that these chump-ass Republicans, like I said earlier tonight, were marching across the Capitol Rotunda chanting rule of law.
With regard to Clinton.
Regard to Clinton and his girlfriend.
Yeah. Murky
bastard. My God.
Oh yeah. Such phonies.
I hear you.
And this is a side note. I believe, wasn't it Chris Dodd's father that was involved in conducting the Nuremberg trials after they after we defeated the bastards over there.
He was one of the prosecutors, I believe.
Right, and so I think Chris understands what the importance of not letting us fall into a fascist state is, and we're damn sure headed there with this kind of crap. We're just circumventing what should be just common sense decisions to execute the law. If these guys have done nothing wrong, these telecom companies, then what the hell they need immunity for? And if they have done something wrong, why on earth would anybody want to give them immunity? Where's the law now?
It's the second part of your question there. They have violated the law. The law said that, you know, until the Bush crime family said, well, no, you know, John Yoo and Alberto Gonzalez have decided that we don't need to have court orders in order to listen in on American. The hell they don't.
Right.
Of course they do. So I think everyone knows, even the ones who are supporting the telecom companies know that they were co-conspirators in violating the law. But what some of the Democrats are saying is, all the Republicans, but some of the Democrats are saying, well, you know, let's give them a break because they honestly believed that they were helping America stop terrorism. That's
yeah,
a filthy lie.
That's
a total lie. What they believed was, since they helped put Bush in office with their lies and their deception on television, they believed that they had a debt to this thug and they were trying to pay him back. Sure, we'll help you out, George. What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
So it's and this is what John Edwards is talking about when John Edwards talks about how
corporations and their undue influence in
how corporate America is just shredding the Constitution. You get the wrong people in office and then connect them up with these filthy corrupt corporations and you get the Bush crime family. So this is where Edwards, I think, like I said earlier tonight, the more and more I think about it, Edwards may be about the most honorable person running on the Democratic side that even has a chance. John, Kelly, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, pal. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Watch your money grow. You know it compounds over time, which means money grows and grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Is that what that means? It grows bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Oh my God. Oh well. Back to your phone calls. Peter is calling from San Francisco, listening on the internet. Peter, welcome to the program.
Oh, well, good evening.
Hi.
I just wanted to call you because I'm an AT&T employee.
You're an AT&T employee.
Yeah, and every year we have mandatory coverage of something called the Privacy of Communications Act.
What's it called?
Privacy of Communications Act.
Uh-huh.
FCC.
Right.
And supposedly, can I say butt inset on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm listening to your phone line. Troubleshoot for noise and static,
uh-huh.
And somebody comes off hook,
uh-huh.
And talks about a drug deal.
Right.
I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Okay.
So they make me sign this paper every year.
Right.
So how does that sit with the little room in my home, in my town here, 611 Folsom, where they channel all our internet information and all our emails and this conversation?
Right.
Off to Washington.
You are kind of non-essential in, except as consumers to these huge corporations. They don't give a damn. If your telecommunications, whether it's over the internet or the phone lines, are monitored and listened to and stuck in a file someplace to the people doing it, so what?
Oh, besides the fact, whenever I talk to my mother or my twin brother, I'm calling either France or Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
So, and it doesn't help that my mother's initials are AK.
AK.
And she went to Barnard College in 1947.
Yeah.
Oh, they got us now.
Well, watch your back, Peter.
Oh, constantly.
And your front and your sides and up above and down below. I mean, that's what I do. What the telecom companies are doing is, or what they have done for 6 years running, is just astonishing. Hey, Peter, thanks. I got to move on. I appreciate what you had to say. It's just astonishing that in the United States, the, you know, the land of the free? Oh, please. The home of the brave? Who? That in the United States, in 2007, we have a situation where the United States Senate is trying to take away the ability of people to sue these sons of bitches in the telecom industry for violating their privacy. Members of the Senate are trying to take that right away. Take it away. Members of the Senate are not holding hearings and demanding why these telecom giants decided to become co-conspirators in violating federal law. Oh, no, 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 no. And you know why? Of course. How many members of the Senate do you think have never gotten campaign contributions from any corporation in the telecom industry? How many out of the 100 senators? None? One? So instead of holding hearings and fining these sons of bitches hundreds of millions of dollars and maybe bringing their corporate heads in and charging them with violation of the law and trying them and putting them in prison, rather than doing that, which is by God what would happen to you and I if we stole a loaf of bread from your local convenience store. Okay, maybe I wouldn't go to jail. Maybe you wouldn't for stealing a loaf of bread. But you'd have a misdemeanor conviction. Of course, on the other hand, if you happen to be carrying a gun the way I do and you stole the loaf of bread, then a gun in the commission of a felony. Uh-oh. Goodbye. But the telecom companies, for 6 long years, violated federal law. Who among the sons of bitches is going to go to a federal lockup? No one. What is the Senate doing to deal with this? They're trying to make it legal retroactively. This is where we are in the United States of America in 2007. This is where we are. A bunch of lawmakers, isn't that what they're called? Desperately trying to make new law to exempt corporations who violated the law. Now, put your brain around that one, truth seeker. Go ahead. It just never stops, does it? It just never stops. What was the vote today? 75 United States senators who by definition are lawmakers voting to excuse 6 years of federal law breaking? Go ahead, think about it. Nah, doesn't matter. Steve is calling from Decatur, Illinois, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
All right, man. Hey, Merry Xmas.
Thanks. Back at you.
Hey, I used to live in Nevada, man, in Nye County.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about Harry Reid, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Now, he gets elected over and over again from the big population in Las Vegas who elects him because they think that he's against the Yucca Mountain Project.
Uh-huh.
But Harry Reid is plugged into the Yucca Mountain Project. That's been going on for decades, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. It's happening now. They're drilling the tunnels right now as we speak.
Well, yeah, well, that's, you're right. It's been going on forever. But it's my understanding That's one of those, it's become one of those projects that continues to suck up millions and millions and millions of dollars, but is never, ever going to happen. If for people don't know, what Steve's talking about, Yucca Mountain is the area in Nevada where they want to bury all of this nation's toxic nuclear waste that has been generated for the past 70 years. And a lot of people in Nevada are saying, wait a second, no, I don't think so. Because the half... Yeah, go ahead.
It's going to happen, Mike. They're not only going to take the waste of the United States, they're going to take the waste of the world.
It's already going on. This is what Naomi Klein talks about. It's called disaster capitalism.
Yes.
If there's a way to make money on somebody's testicular cancer, there is some company in the United States who will figure. I'm not talking about curing or radiation or whatever the hell they do for testicular cancer, but if there's a way to make money on it, somebody's personal disaster. These slimy sons of bitches who now operate without restriction. The corporations in this country, because they have been invited, they started being invited in the Reagan years to come in and write the laws that would govern how they do business. And this is what John Edwards is trying to get across to the American public and will not succeed. He will not succeed. He will not get his message out to enough people because the very corporations that he's trying to point out that are destroying, eating from within our system of government, of self-government, are the very corporations that constantly deny him access to the kind of media exposure or approval that Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton are getting. It's awful. Steve, thanks. I got to move on. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Mark is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Mark.
Oh, hi. Hi, Mike. Greetings. First time I've talked to you since you've been at Nova M, and it certainly is a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I wanted to say that with Harry Reid and his ilk, that people don't give them enough guff back for what they're doing to the Constitution, and even a lot of liberals. And it really upsets me. I hear on some talk radio shows and on a couple blogs I read, you know, where they are apologizing for the Democrats, of the poor Democrats can't do anything. Now, people like you and Rachel Maddow also very strongly have worked out some very good plans on, you know, how you don't send certain funding bills to the Senate, how you do filibuster like Dodd did. It was the first one, I think, in 15 years that they had a Democrat do a real filibuster or something like that. And it's like you're just making it easier for them to do what they really want. And I've come to the conclusion, it's not just fear and everything. I think a very major reason for why we see them going along with Bush, it has to be stated, is because they believe in what he does. They believe in American empire, and they are totally tied to the rich.
I think you make a good point, Mark, and it's a shame. And I just wonder if the Democratic Party will ever be the Democratic Party again. Mark, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. Check back in with us. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Stand up.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our engineer, Ian Huff, technical director of this program, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bayard, executive producer. Back to your phone calls. Jim is calling from New Mexico, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, Mike, I think it's time to say bully for Senator Dodd for standing up.
I think so.
When the other guys wouldn't do anything. And I'd like to see him be a vice presidential candidate, but I'd like to see John Edwards be the nominee. But I don't know whether we're going to get that or not.
Yeah, I'm starting to lean heavily towards Edwards myself. Kathy has been talking about Edwards for quite some time now, and I this whole caucus and these primaries and it just so stacked against someone like. Oh, John Edwards, Dennis Kucinich, Chris Dodd.
Well, we got to get big money out of these campaigns.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd like to see Dennis Kucinich as the Attorney General.
Boy, wouldn't that be something?
Oh, man, I that would make my decade.
I hear that.
Anyway, it's good talking to you, Mike, and I'm glad you're back on Novium there, the satellite radio.
All right, well, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you, Jim. Take care. We'll talk again. We're almost out of time, aren't we? We got time for another call? We do? Oh, while we're waiting for that last caller to come up, the energy bill. Somebody sent me this. It says the energy bill passed. So do kidney stones. Last Thursday, the so-called energy bill passed by a vote of 86-8. Passed the Senate. 86-8. Now, the Republicans had threatened to filibuster the bill, and they would have, because Republicans stick together just like, I don't know, like sheep on a hillside when there's a wolf around, or like wolves themselves when they're going after an elk someplace in the Great White North. They're predators as a gang. That's why Republicans get things done in a predatory environment that they have in the House or the Senate, because they are predators. They stick together. They find a weakness in the other herd, and they attack and slash and devour and usually win. So the Republicans had threatened to filibuster the energy bill unless it had certain stipulations. So they got what they wanted, thanks to the Democrats. The energy bill's continuation of wind and solar tax incentives, gone. The clean energy mandate for utilities achieving 15% of renewables, gone. The tax break, let me rephrase that, the enormous tax break subsidies that big oil has gotten since 2004 will continue. Can you believe that? Tax breaks to oil companies that have shown more profit in the last year, I think, last 2 years, 3 years, than any corporations in the history of capitalism. And their tax breaks will continue. Ethanol and biofuels got a hefty and controversial boost. And our poor, picked upon automakers have until 2020 to somehow figure out a way to get up to a fleet-wide standard of 35 miles per gallon. 13 years. Now, the European fleet average right now is in the low 40s. Japan, 46 miles per gallon. China, 35 miles per gallon. America, too hard. We can't do it. Plus, separately, Congress reached an agreement on a major energy package that it plans to enact outside the energy bill that would authorize the Energy Department to guarantee loans to the rising up nuclear industry. The stake has been pulled out of its heart. It's starting to rise up out of its coffin now. $25 billion in loan guarantees for new nuclear plants. $25 billion. Now, why? Very simply, without government handouts, nuclear power remains too risky to finance and impossible to insure. So, there you go, truth seekers. The energy bill passed with the Republicans holding guns to the heads of every single Democrat in the Senate saying, if you don't give us our way, we're going to filibuster you. And, of course, the Democrats said, oh, please don't do that. Please, we'll be good. Oh, man. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers, okay? Take care. Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. And once again, if you missed it, Dan Fogelberg, dead today at age 56. Prostate cancer. Take care. Take home the snow.